Seekers, Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. I guess I should start with this breaking news from Reno, Nevada. An air race out there, a vintage aircraft, and apparently one of the aircraft crashed into what's being reported as a VIP section of the audience, right into the spectators. There are also reports that the pilot of this plane was an 80-year-old pilot who had been flying in these races for decades. The reports so far, as you can imagine, are fairly sketchy, but the scene is supposed to be one of utter chaos and destruction. It's about 8 past the hour. This hour is sponsored by Thomas Rice, who writes, "Give 'em hell." Tom. Well, thanks, Tom. I could read that, "Give 'em hell, Tom." No. "Give 'em hell" from Tom. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it. I like succinct messages, too. That's cool. Thanks, Tom. I mean, you know, I like the long ones, too, but oh, and by the way, I just have to say this because she's a frequent sponsor of this program. I'm talking about Alice at Heelan Hollers down in Arkansas. The other night I was kind of half bitching, complaining about the stuff that she sells is just amazing. The stuff she makes and sells is just incredible. I've never had that experience before with, you know, products by a small businesswoman like this, or somebody at the big company, doesn't matter, where everything is exactly as is advertised. And I said something about, well, you know, I wish she had patchouli oil and some of the fragrant oils. Sure enough, 2 days later, UPS truck worked its way out here to the foothills of the North Georgia, well, FedEx, actually, and brought us three small, you know, those vials that you can buy in stores with body oils on it. There it was. One was lavender, one was some orange, and one was patchouli. And it's really good patchouli. I don't know if you know who likes patchouli. I love it. But anyway, is this a shameless plug? Yes, of course it is. Absolutely. A shameless plug, because Alice at Heelan Hollers has been putting a lot of sponsorship in this program. So thanks, Alice. Thanks for the freebies. I do appreciate it. If you are somebody who likes body scents, you know, the oils that I love patchouli. I just can't stop. You know, I can't not love it. Go to her website. And that's it. Just go to MikeMolloy.com. Click on her little ad there. Heelan Hollers. Alice at Heelan Hollers down in Arkansas. This stuff is good. Well, it's like anything else she sells. So, now, I didn't mean to crowd out, "Give 'em hell," signed Tom, who is sponsoring this hour. Thank you, Tom. I just wanted to get that mentioned about Alice. Quite a week, huh? Do you feel that that you've been through the ringer this week? I do. I really do. And I'm not quite sure how to take it. The moment with Bob that I read last night on the program that he sent to me, you know, Moments with Bob. Bob, who is now an expat American living in British Columbia. That letter from Bob is, I don't know if it's gone viral on the web, but it's been picked up by, oh my God, last count, six or seven websites that are, that have an enormous amount of traffic. Everybody from TV News Lies to Op-Ed News to Jeff Rentz's website to whatreallyhappened.com. I mean, it's just, and I think that's good because it is a cri de coeur. Is that how it's pronounced? And of course, Bob was saying this long before he and his wife and their child made the decision. Well, Bob and his wife made the decision, but that the time had come. And the feedback that I've been hearing from various websites that have posted this is that some of the, you know, you get your smart-ass comments from people who cruise through the liberal or progressive websites and just find stuff that they can bitch about and slam the author and so on and so forth. But the positive stuff, a lot of it is coming from people who are now wanting to get in touch with Bob Alexander and ask him how, you know, how to get exit papers. Hey. Anyway, just thought I would let you know that because a lot of people emailed me and said, you know, that was really something. It was one of the best things that Bob Alexander's ever written. And, you know, when you get something that comes from the heart, Bob, a lot of times, like Prairie 2 and some of the other contributors to this program, write from the head. But every once in a while, you get that cry from the heart, and it resonates with a lot of people. A lot of us who may want to write that way, but for some reason are reluctant to put ourselves out there like that and say, this is how I felt, this is what I experienced, this is what's been going on, and then expand it out to include not just their own lives, but the life of the country. You know, that takes some guts to do that. It really does. If you are a writer, and I know a lot of you are who contribute to this program, I can tell by your style. So many of you are. I can't name all the names, but there's probably 30 or 40 of you who's maybe more, whose writing is just astonishing to me, how well done what you put together and email to me, how well done it really is. And I said this the other night when I was going through all those emails. It's part of this program that gives me insight. A lot more so than, you know, some of the stuff that I draw on for topics on the program, because I usually go to alternative media or mainstream media, global media, whatever. But the stuff that comes in from people who take the time to write something out and really put head and sometimes heart into it, it's really amazing to me how many excellent writers have found this program. I appreciate that. Mayor Michael Bloomberg is, when I heard about this today, I thought, oh my God, he's been listening to Kevin Zeese and Margaret Flower and the people over at October2011.org. That's an instant connection that I made. As soon as I heard what Michael Bloomberg said today, he was on WR, I guess, in New York, doing an interview. And I didn't hear the whole interview, but I heard little bits and pieces because what he said made the news. And the first thing I thought was, he's been talking to Kevin Zeese. He's been talking to Dr. Margaret Flowers. He's been talking to Mike Ferner. He's been talking to, just go right down the list. He's been talking to Rabbi Michael Lerner. He's been reading people whose essays have been warning and warning and warning of an impending train wreck for this country. I'll tell you what Bloomberg said when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Today, compared the jobs crisis in the United States to the circumstances that led to the riots, the violence, the killing, the burning overseas. He said during his weekly radio show, quote, "You have a lot of kids graduating college who can't find jobs. That's what happened in Cairo. That's what happened in Madrid. You don't want those kinds of riots here," end quote. And Bloomberg apparently was responding to a question about the U.S. poverty rate, which has risen again to 15% plus. Of course, that's a phony-ass figure, and you know it is as well as I do. The poverty figure in this country is more like about 30 or maybe 35%. But the 15% is the highest level since 1993, and I can guarantee you that the poverty level, when you factor in those numbers that the government, I don't care who's in charge of the government, but the bureaucrats refuse to factor in because it would paint a picture that would be, well, it would lead to what Bloomberg's talking about if the truth were known. Bloomberg went on to say, quote, "The public is not happy. The public knows there's something wrong in this country, and there is. The bottom line is that they're upset," end quote. Bloomberg is a master of understatement. Anyone who has paid attention to his press briefings and his comments and so on and so forth, I don't have any bone to pick with Bloomberg at all. I think the people in New York probably see him as a good mayor. Some of the things I've heard him do or say, I thought, yeah, you know, right on. Other things I thought, Jesus, you know, are you that out of touch? But this, he's stating, and when you consider who he is, he's a billionaire several times over. He's the mayor of the most populous city in the United States. The mayor of the city that is, without a doubt, the financial and cultural bullseye. Bad word. Center of the United States and a place where people around the world would like to be. That's who he is. I mean, Michael Bloomberg, what was that commercial years ago before E.F. Hutton went bankrupt? When E.F. Hutton speaks, everybody listens or something like that. Didn't they go out of business because of fraud and criminal acts? And I have no idea. But when Bloomberg talks, people do tend to listen, not necessarily because of who he is, but because of what he represents, the leadership of the city of New York, where Much of the criminal activity that has been perpetrated against the American public has originated. New York and Washington, those are the two places. The financial services section and this clutch of miserable sons of bitches in Washington. I'm going to try not to get really wired up tonight because all it does is make my voice end like it did last night. I'm trying to read Bob Alexander's piece last night. So I'm going to try real hard tonight not to start the screaming and straining the vocal cords. Probably all full of polyps anyway. But when Bloomberg, Michael Bloomberg, himself a billionaire, has no problem buying his way into office. Now, a lot of people will say that. I just said the voters in New York must like him. Okay, but what did he spend on his third term as mayor of New York? I mean, it was tens of millions or hundreds of millions. I have no idea. So he must like the job, right? But unless things change, he is saying this country is going to experience the kinds of riots and death. He didn't use the word death, but I mean, come on. The situation that had earlier this year exploded in Egypt, in Madrid. Let's not forget Greece, Mr. Mayor, or Tunisia, or Libya, or Syria. You can never tell about Iraq because our presence there and our invasion and occupation has resulted in hundreds of thousands, if not billions, of deaths and displaced persons. But I think Bloomberg is, and good on him for stating the obvious. But when I read this, immediately thought about my guest the other night, Michael, or Kevin Zeese, and last week, Dr. Margaret Flowers, who, in a much lower keyed way, are warning the same thing. And that's the reason for this gathering that begins October 6, 2011. The October2011.org website is where you get the information. But there's more on this. I'll share it with you when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Six crooked highways have stepped in the middle of seven sad forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard rain that's gonna fall.
He's the voice inside your head. It's Mike Malloy.
Would not run from the Holocaust. Would not run from the bomb.
25 before the hour. And again, this hour is sponsored by Thomas. Is it Reese or Rice? When you have two vowels together, do you pronounce the first one? So it's Reese? Reese? Anyway, Tom's message is give him hell. Thanks for the sponsorship, Tom. Coming up the bottom of the next hour, podcast trivia. And we'll give away a one-year commercial-free podcast download subscription to The Malloy Show. Michael Bloomberg said today that the jobs crisis in the U.S. could lead to the circumstances that produced riots, bloodshed, mayhem overseas. And he's absolutely right. And he's talking about young people graduating college who can't find jobs. I also heard on the news today that by the end of this year, indebtedness, money owed by college graduates, will top $1 trillion, which means that for the first time, there is more debt on the backs of college graduates than all the credit card debt taken together in the United States. You talk about breaking the backs of an entire generation. Just absolutely. Now, yes, of course, there is still a lot of demand for scientists and engineers. especially engineers. But not everybody can be, you know, that can get into that field. That's like, I was in high school when Sputnik went up. And all of a sudden, those of us who had been tracked into academic classes were shifted even further into applied math. I mean, hardcore stuff, which immediately made me feel like I was drowning. But everybody was told, you're going to have to become a mechanical engineer, an electrical engineer, some sort of an engineer, chemical engineer. We have to catch the Russians, right? But a lot of people who are graduating with degrees in the humanities or in international relations or English or foreign language or art history, or I mean, just pick a field, are finding that they're unemployable. A son of friends of mine graduated from NYU with a degree in screenwriting. And after about 8 months, finally wound up with a job at Huffington Post. I mean, it just goes on and on. And it makes you wonder how much longer the younger generation is going to deal with this. We've mentioned many times on this program, and this may be ignorance on my part. I'll preface what I've got to say by saying that. But where is the younger generation? Where are they? You know, yeah, I'm from the 60s generation. Okay. And I'm, you know, I'm proud of that. I'm not the least bit ashamed of that. And I don't know why I said that. Why should anybody be ashamed of the 60s generation? But where is that kind of energy? Well, it may be happening out there, just like Kevin Zeese pointed out in the program. When was it, Kathy? Wednesday? There is all kinds of action going on around the country. It's just media do not report it. And so it's very difficult unless, I'm talking about, you know, capitalist media, mainstream media, whatever you want to call it, corporate media. You have to be tuned in. Social media has been not only reporting it, but organizing it or allowing the organization to take place within the confines of social media, which was not available to the 60s generation. We did have mimeograph machines, oh, by God. So there may be a lot going on that I'm just not aware of. But what I am aware of is there are not massive demonstrations. There are not masses of people. I'm talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And again, I know it gets tiresome to hear this on this program, to hear me say this over and over, but what's it going to take before people realize that the only way out of this is to take control ourselves, to take control? And the easy, now by take control, Gandhi took control. Martin Luther King took control. There are ways to take control that doesn't necessarily mean violent overthrow of the government or violent overthrow of the economic system or any kind of overthrow. Sometimes you can take control by refusing to participate in the cogs in the machine turning one more revolution. At some point, people just say, no, that's it. Now, in societies that are different from ours, saying, okay, that's it, may result in hundreds of thousands of people in the streets with the kind of pent-up rage that results in violence. That's what American television loves to show us. That's what the camera loves. That's one of the reasons why demonstrations in this country, no matter how big they are for the most part ignored by corporate media. But I'll tell you what, you let incidences of violence or perceived violence start to occur whether it is police violence or demonstrator violence or whatever it is. And all of a sudden, every goddamn camera in America wants to get on that action, right? But to show people or to tell us about people who are saying this is enough and doing it in a peaceful way, just like talking with Dr. Flower and Kevin Zeese about what sort of media coverage is expected for the beginning or the duration of this event that starts October 6th in Washington in Freedom Plaza. And if immediate history is any example, not very much. There were 1,200 people arrested protesting. Was it 1,200 or 1,400 over the course of several days in front of the White House protesting the pipeline from the tar sands pits in Alberta to tax-free zones in Texas where it's going to be refined and sent overseas? It's not coming here. Don't be a total dumbass like a teabagger and think that this is going to have. And besides, Canadian oil is foreign oil. So if you're an American, don't think that that oil is going to be used by the oil companies to bring down oil prices in this country or what have you. It's going to go onto the global market as all oil does. Even the stuff that's dug out of holes in Oklahoma. Where do you think it goes? To Oklahoma? Please. I mean, it's one thing to be ignorant. It's something else, again, to be just utterly, utterly stupid. Don't be stupid. So, Michael Bloomberg is issuing a very clear warning. According to the New York Daily News, Bloomberg gave Barack Obama credit for coming up with his recently proposed jobs bill. Bloomberg said, quote, at least he's got some ideas on the table, whether you like him or not. I can agree with that. I can agree with that statement. I'm not saying I support the ideas that Obama came up with. As far as I'm concerned, they're still lukewarm. They're not. Those are the little baby steps of somebody who is afraid to assert the power of the presidency, or he is being told, don't you dare assert the power of the president. You know, who knows? Who the hell knows anymore? But Bloomberg said, you know, at least I give him credit, whether you like the ideas or not, he got some out there. And then Bloomberg added, quote, now everybody's got to sit down and say we're actually going to do something. And you have to do something on both the revenue and the expense side. And this is where I, you know, would part company with Bloomberg. We don't have a so-called expense crisis in this country. That's hog snot. We have a tax crisis. We have too many freeloaders in this country. And it's not the welfare mother who is barely getting by on the equivalent of food stamps. No, that's not where the welfare is. And you know it as well as I do. The welfare is in corporate America. You know, when you have a company like GE or Exxon Mobil who just says, F you, we're not paying any taxes at all, America, kiss our ass. And then they go ahead and follow through and don't pay anything. That's the welfare. That's where the revenue has got to come from. You know, when I'm finally king of America for one day, oh, Jesus, I will put about a 4-year confiscatory tax on these sons of bitches until I feel like they are at least even with what this country has given them, you know, in giving back. And the wealthy in this country, the top 1%, top 0.5%, 0.25%, the real scum that just continues to take and take and take. That's where the revenue can be raised, Mayor, right there.
Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Bloomberg, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, who we're talking about this hour, who warned today during his weekly radio program on WR in New York, he warned that unless the jobs crisis is solved, and he's only talking about college graduates. See, that's the ironic part. Mr. Bloomberg, there are more people out here who are jobless than the elite class that you're talking about. Not to take anything away from college graduates. I'm just saying. But he was referring to, he said, quote, you have a lot of kids graduating college who can't find jobs. That's what happened in Cairo. That's what happened in Madrid. You don't want those kinds of riots here. End quote. He's essentially correct, but or he's correct as far as he goes, I should say. But Mr. Bloomberg, there are hundreds of thousands, millions of non-college graduates out here in the same age group as the college graduates who also cannot get a job. So it's not just one slice of the demographic that you have to worry about, Mr. Bloomberg, or that we have to worry about, Mr. Mayor. He also warned that the jobs crisis, this depression that we're in, will have consequences far into the future. Bloomberg added, quote, the damage to a generation that can't find jobs will go on for many, many years, end quote. And that's the part that is just makes me want to grab the nearest Republican legislator and waterboard him. The ones in Washington. I mean, just put them on the board and start pouring the water. Is because they are, while they are hell-bent on destroying the political career of the colored guy in the White House, which is the only thing they see, just like that marble-mouthed son of a bitch from Kentucky, Mitch McConnell. Well, I'll tell you what, the only thing we're interested in doing is making sure that Barack Obama is a one-term president. You miserable little white bastard, you. That's why I hate these Republicans. I'm not real fond of Obama, but I don't hate him. These scum-sucking Republicans who stand in the way of everything because they're hell-bent on destroying Barack Obama. In the meantime, they're destroying an entire generation. So let me ask you something. You folks that are in the 21 to 28 age demographic, are you going to vote Republican in November or are you just going to stay home? I don't blame you if you just stay home, but are you going to vote Republican? Do you, you know, your throat has already been cut, but the knife slice by Mitch McConnell and Boehner and Eric Cantor and the rest of these thugs, the knife slice did not quite get your jugular. Vote Republican in November 2012. Go ahead and get the jugular. Jesus. So Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of the billionaire mayor of New York, is issuing a warning that there is a possibility. I don't think he referred to it as a possibility. I get the sense it's more of a probability. He said you have a lot of kids graduating college who can't find jobs. That's a declarative sentence. That's what happened in Cairo, another declarative. That's what happened in Madrid, another declarative. You don't want those kinds of riots here. Not quite a declarative sentence. The public is not happy, Bloomberg said. The public knows there's something wrong in this country, and there is. He added, the bottom line is that they're upset. Which, end quote, which is a billionaire's way of putting it, I guess. They're upset. No, it's a little bit stronger than that, Mr. Bloomberg. It really is, Mr. Mayor. It's a little bit stronger than being upset. There are people in this country who are frantic who are desperate, who are being turned out of their homes, who have seen everything that they thought that they had gotten a toehold on or into a handhold into disappear. It's being taken from them. They are being thrown in the street, a lot of these families. Do you know, Mr. Bloomberg, Mayor Michael Bloomberg, has not a clue, unless I'm wrong, and maybe he does hang out at food banks and homeless shelters in NYC. I don't know. But in the Metro Atlanta area, in Metro Chicago, Savannah, L.A., Fresno, Jesus, I mean, pick a city. And those people that you see, thousands showing up at jobs, job fairs. Some of them, yeah, are college graduates. And some of them are heavily burdened now with debt, because they bought into the lie. They bought into the lie. Capitalism is just beating them senseless. Go into debt. Go into debt. Get your college education. Go into debt. And now what? Their credit ratings are going to be ruined because these predatory sons of bitches that lend to them, all of which is backed by the government. Remember the effort to get the predatory lenders out of it and have the college students just borrow directly from the government at a much lower rate? Whatever happened to that idea? Well, Mr. Bloomberg, I think you're touching on something that is very, very real, and I respect you for having the nerve to come right out and say it. All right, stick around. Second hour of the Malloy program is coming up. Bottom of this hour, we'll have podcast trivia. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Jay Farner.
NBC is still providing uninterrupted coverage of this tragedy in Reno, Nevada at the air race, vintage aircraft race that has been organized several times. One of the planes, apparently piloted by an older pilot, crashed into a spectator area, a VIP spectator area, and the destruction is substantial. One witness describes it as absolute carnage on the ground. I'll leave that horrific story to, you know, your local news coverage or whatever. But just to acknowledge it, that's the reason I bring it up. This hour, by the way, is sponsored by James Higgins. Thanks, James. No message, just from James. Now, regarding the student debt that I was just talking about, that this whole generation of college students is graduating with, and I know about that. My son graduated with no debt, but his wife graduated with substantial, well, not unmanageable debt, but. And I believe since she graduated law school, there is she works for a nonprofit, and I think, what is it, Kathy? If she does that for 5 years or something, a substantial portion of the debt that she accrued will be forgiven. She won't have to pay it back. So, you know, that particular bullet, I think my last kid who went to university has escaped that. And the debt that he and his wife have is manageable from her trek through law school. Anyway, from Prairie 2, the student debt doesn't count credit card debt held by students or money spent for colleges by or for college by middle class families that comes from second mortgages. Then there's the drain on middle-class family wealth that won't be replaced by the slave wages of the new college-educated working poor. The high degree of indebtedness by the new working generation will drive down wages across the board, even for those who had the family money to pay for school. Then you must consider that this debt is just phony to begin with. We have a currency based on the issuance of debt. The money used for student debt, credit card debt, mortgages, business loans, on, all comes from the Federal Reserve, who create the money out of thin air and loan it to the rich through their banks and corporations, who in turn loan it to the peasants at a stiff markup. There's no reason to do this, except to support a class of people who do nothing but consume. If they would restrict themselves to sitting around the pool, that would be bad enough. But they can help themselves and to try and grab it all for themselves by destroying the middle class completely. This is being done by endless war to distract the peasants and make them fearful. The theft of business assets by predatory practices and the wholesale outsourcing of jobs to hollow out the economy until it collapses. Mayor Bloomberg may or may not grasp all of this is going on, but he has noticed the trees on fire, if not the forest behind them. So true. So true. We have a regular report from Prairie 2 a little bit later in the program here. Michigan Republicans are continuing their assault on the Constitution. Don't forget that not only did the midterm elections deliver majority to the Republicans in the U.S. House and a minority in the Senate that is capable of bringing the entire country to a grinding halt, which it has done effectively for the past 2 years. Not only that, almost 2 years, but so many state legislatures went over to total Republican control and with Republican governors. The result is a move to fascist legislation that is going way beyond what the federal government can do, because the federal government, of course, is bound by the U.S. Constitution, whereas the states are bound by their state constitutions, which are easily amended, unless there is something that is passed that is patently unconstitutional at a federal level, and then, of course, somebody has to take it to court and has to wend its way through the federal court system up the Supreme Court, blah, 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 blah. The Republicans who control Michigan yesterday started another attempt to block the offering of taxpayer-paid health insurance to domestic partners living with public employees. You know, these Republican cockroaches are determined to destroy so-called public employees. They're determined. The Republican-controlled House in Michigan passed legislation, according to the Detroit Free Press, which is a right-wing newspaper, aimed at prohibiting public employers from extending the benefits to unmarried partners of employees, same sex or opposite sex, by a vote of 64 to 44, mostly along party lines, of course. The measure next goes to the Republican-controlled Senate. Now, the Free Press says it's unclear how much impact the legislation would have if it were to become law. The proposal is written to apply to, quote, all public employers to the greatest extent consistent with constitutionally allocated powers, end quote, which is the attempt by the Republicans to protect themselves from court challenges. Democrats who oppose the legislation immediately say it is constitutional and it will be challenged in court. The Civil Service Commission in Michigan voted early this year to allow domestic partner benefits for some state employees starting in October. And Republicans tried to overturn that decision, but couldn't get the two-thirds majority vote needed in the House. So they introduced this bill. Republicans supporting the bills, both of them approved yesterday, say they reflect the will of Michigan voters who decided in 2004 to define marriage as a union between one man and one dog. Oh, no, one man and one parrot. No, one man and one tree frog. No, one tree frog and one woman. No, one man and one woman. Republicans say some employers have gotten around the implications of that constitutional amendment by extending the health care benefits to domestic partners of the opposite sex along with same-sex partners. Oh, no, we'll have none of that. You sneaky public employers, you're trying to guarantee equal protection under the law. And you do it very sneaky. You're going to give, I'm yelling again, you're going to give health care benefits to same-sex or to opposite-sex partners as a way of smoke screening that little gift you're trying to give the queers, right? Don't you know they're infiltrating our schools? Don't you know the next thing is going to happen? They're going to make sure that every church in America has to have a gay preacher. Haven't you heard about that? Yeah, that's true. Every church in America is going to have a homosexual preacher. Yes. You haven't heard that? You don't listen to Focus on the Family, do you? Huh? Sick bastards. Well, if the revolution comes, I know where I will be with my pitchforks and flaming faggots. That's what they were called, flaming faggots. You know, the sticks you hold up in the air. Of course, my flaming faggots are actual people. We'll be right back. For trivia, which we'll do after the next break. The number here is 877-996-2556. You know, another example of, I don't know, example of what, Mike? Corporate malfeasance, idiocy, capitalist, I don't give a damn attitude, you know, the attitude on the part of the corporatist capitalists who run this country. They don't give a damn about the political system. They don't give a damn about the education system. And now there's this. Birth control pills recalled over a packaging error. You heard about this, right? multiple lots of birth control pills are being recalled because of packaging error that could lead to incorrect dosing and unintended pregnancies. The company, Qualitest Pharmaceuticals, says the error caused the weekly tablet orientation, if you've seen those things, to be reversed. You know, usually the last week for a woman is taking birth control pills, it's a placebo. And they reversed it. How do you? Now, as Kathy pointed out to me, most women who take these pills will notice that. And, you know, call the pharmacy and say, wait. My dosages seem to be reversed here. But obviously, this could lead to inadequate contraception if women don't get the proper daily dose of the drug. Now, I can hear the religious crazies in this country say, yeah, that'll show them. Oops, don't scream. Qualitest Pharmaceuticals is a unit of Endo Pharmaceuticals Holdings. Doesn't that sound reassuring? Huh? Something called Endo Pharmaceuticals Holdings. Ooh, I want to take drugs from a company with that name. Holdings? So if you are on BC pills and you just got a new script, you might want to take a quick look inside that little plastic container. I know you're way ahead of me. I'm just coming across like a sexist, arrogant thug right now, as if women have to be told, right? But, you know, just another example of the failure that's going on in this country. Yes?
All right. Just speaking from a female perspective, have to say, ladies, you know, you can't trust anything out there anymore that you use for protection or your body or acne or hormone replacement or anything. You know, look at your pack of pills. 3 weeks of the pills will look exactly the same. 1 week of the pill will be different. It'll be a different color, a different size, a different shape, a different something.
Okay, now you're being...
Those don't have hormones in them.
Now you're being patronizing.
No, I'm trying to be informative because I don't take the placebos. I figure I can have junk in my diet without taking placebos.
You don't take those?
No, they're just nothing. They're powder. Oh. They're like Prince's new name. They're just whoosh. They don't do anything. They're just placeholders.
It's not new, Kathy. It was new 15 years ago.
No, I'm just saying the pills that you take the week that you're supposed to be menstruating don't do anything except remind you to take a pill every day.
Uh-huh.
So if you, I hate to say this, but if you can't tell the difference when you're looking at a pack of pills, if you can't see the week that's different, then you got more problems than just, you know, who manufactured your birth control pills.
You know, that's very true. You know what you said, though, about you got to be suspicious of anything, you know, that you put on your body. Not necessarily so. There's a company down in Arkansas called Helen Hollers.
With the exception, now, tell you what, if Alice ever puts out an estrogen cream, baby, I'm all over it. Bring it on. That's it for me.
If you want some good patchouli oil, go to my website, MikeMalloy.com. Look for Alice's Helen Hollers things.
If it can keep you from getting pregnant, definitely buy it.
No, patchouli oil will cause you to get pregnant because, you know, it has a very high, you know, kind of excitability factor. At least it does for me. I love patchouli oil. But go to Alice's website and take a look and get some of that stuff because she makes good. See, I'm doing another shameless plug. I don't care. She sent me a little free, three little tiny, the size of your little finger, three little bottles.
Just like Rick Perry, you can't be bought for three bottles of essential oil.
The hell I can't. I'm easy. All right, we got to take a break here. When we come back, podcast trivia, and also what Spain is doing to help with their financial crisis and Prairie 2. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
I can go on since she.
left me alone. My one desire is to try not to cry. She might come back one day, bye bye and bye. My head is spinning, I'm going around and around. My head is spinning, I'm going around and around. Witchcrafts are going to keep going down.
Before the hour. This hour is sponsored by James Higgins. Thank you, James. I think it's time once again for, oh my God, podcast trivia here on the Malloy Program. As we are wont to do every Friday night, all you have to do is answer correctly the multiple choice question that we offered to you. If you get the correct answer, and if so, we will make sure that you get a one-year subscription free to Malloy Show podcast downloads in your email box every morning, or wherever you want it sent. A retail value of $56.40. It works out to 25 cents a program over a year, which is why this is a two-bit radio program. All right. You folks ready? The tension is just excruciating. Christine is in West Hollywood. Hello, Christine.
Hello. I'm so happy to have made it.
Well, you did. you're here. You're here. All right. Are you ready?
I am.
Okay. All you have to do now is just get the right answer. Okay. Here's the question. This week, televangelist and clinically insane Christian leader Pat Robertson stunned his mouth-breathing followers with which of the following statements? Here they are. A, he's gay, and he and Jerry Falwell had a 20-year-long affair that only ended when Falwell died. B, one time he got angry with his family's dog and beat it repeatedly with a leather-bound Bible. C, he had a near-death experience a number of years ago, and the tunnel he traveled down wound up in Disney World. Or D, if your spouse has Alzheimer's and you meet some babe or hot dude on senior day at the supermarket, it's okay to get a divorce because your spouse has become a real drag anyway, and they'll never know.
Oh, Jesus. Well, it's D.
D. You're absolutely right. Oh, can you believe that?
I think it's thrilling. Oh, no, I cannot believe
it. No.
I think it's hideous.
Well, what a statement from
a Christian
leader, someone who identifies himself as a spokesman for the Christian gospel, saying, well, you know, if your partner gets Alzheimer's, you can leave.
They got sick. What happened to that? You know, in sickness and in health part.
Oh, no. That's only for dunces, you know.
It's only for colds, huh?
Yeah, there you go. All right, Christine, congratulations. If you hold on.
Thank you.
Kathy will get the pertinent information. Thanks for playing, okay?
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. Hold on. And I thought those were good questions. He's gay, and he and Jerry Falwell had a 20-year-long affair that only ended when Falwell died. Now, if it were Rick Santorum, it wouldn't end when... you know, when Falwell died, it would just keep going. Oh, God. And I like that one. He had a near-death experience a number of years ago, and the tunnel he traveled down wound up in Disney World. Woo, Lord have mercy. Speaking of that, very quickly before we move on, there's so many serious things to talk about, I understand. But sometimes I just can't do it. Andy Borowitz, from his website, in a rare public statement, God tells Pat Robertson to shut the F up. The Almighty says, enough already with that moron. According to the Borowitz report, Reverend Pat Robertson's controversial remarks in which he advised that it was acceptable to divorce a spouse with Alzheimer's, drew a harsh rebuke from God Almighty, who held a press conference today to tell him to shut the F up. The bearded king of the universe, dressed in his trademark flowing white robe and carrying a lightning bolt, spoke to reporters at New York's Hyatt Grand Central for 45 minutes in a press conference specifically called to denounce the televangelist. He, capital H, said, quote, I've held my tongue while he's jabbered on and on about me punishing this group and that group with floods and earthquakes and such, but this was the last straw. Enough already with that moron, end quote. In addition to debunking Reverend Robertson's Alzheimer's statement, the Almighty categorically denied using natural disasters in the past to punish gays, Haitians, and other targets of Reverend Robertson's scorn. He, capital H, said, oh, please, that's just weather. On another topic, God attempted to put distance between himself, capital H, and the presidential candidacy of Governor Rick Perry of Texas. He, capital H, said, quote, Rick Perry is qualified to be president in the same way that the Olive Garden is qualified to be Italy. End quote. Andy Borowitz. BorowitzReport.com. Ay, ay, ay. The Spanish Prime Minister, Jose Luis Rodriguez Zapatero, says about 160,000 people in his country will be contributing at the new tax rate. Yeah, Spain today became the first European country to hike taxes on the wealthy with a new asset-based tax targeting the country's richest people. Leave it to Spain, huh? This in The Guardian of the UK. Spain's socialist government hopes that this new wealth tax will raise up to €1 billion in a country where growth is grinding to a halt. And this year's 6% deficit target looks increasingly tough to meet. Now, this represents an actual U-turn, political U-turn for Prime Minister Zapatero, who abolished a similar wealth tax in 2008, which was just before Spain plunged into their recession. A finance ministry statement said, quote, the economic crisis makes it necessary to bring this, boy, there goes my voice again. The economic crisis makes it necessary to bring this tax back, applying principles of fairness so that those with bigger assets can be taxed, and so those who have greater wealth can contribute more to getting a country out of this crisis. Gee, what a radical idea. Principles of fairness. Spaniards with 700,000 euros of assets in real estate, including their main home, as well as in stocks and bank deposits, will have to pay the new tax. The statement from the finance ministry said this tax excludes the middle classes, who are the ones who had been largely affected by it when it was eliminated in 2008. That's a good idea. I think it's a great idea. And I wish it would be applied here. From Renee. Why they deny climate change. Renee writes, I was listening to last night's podcast, and you were curious as to why these deniers would go so far as to poop in their own nest. You know, the ones that deny climate change. They believe in climate change, but they really don't want to do anything about it because they're actually trying to force the second coming. you know, make their savior return, force him by means of making the planet uninhabitable. They believe this will bring on the rapture, and they will be sucked into heaven. Yeah, because destroying their God's creation certainly wouldn't piss him off. Hell is a place filled with Christians. Love your show, Renee. Woo! What else we got here? I'm going to get to Prairie 2 in a second, but I don't dare try with this. What do I have? Laryngeal cancer or something? God, I hope not. It's trying to breathe in Metro Atlanta. No, we don't have. I don't have time to do a Prairie 2s right now. Anyway, we'll wait till we come back. All right, we'll take some phone calls, too, if you want. It is Friday night. The number here is 877-996-2556. So if you want to get online when we come back from this break, we will do some phone calls. You know, I have people on both sides of that issue. A lot of people say, don't take phone calls. Oops, don't do that. A lot of people say, don't take phone calls. Other people say, why don't you ever take phone calls? Okay. We'll do some tonight. I mean, it is Friday night, right? So, what do we call it? Friday Night Frights. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Yet tonight, how much he hates these people. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by James Higgins. Thanks, James. No message, just sponsorship. Very kind of you. We appreciate it. Your phone calls momentarily. First from Prairie 2. President Perry knows who he will bomb first. Ooh-ooh. Unemployment continues to track upward with seasonally adjusted initial claims of 428,000 last week, an increase of 11,000 from the previous week's revised figure of 417,000. This is above what is considered the new normal of 400,000 claims per week. Prior to the beginning of the new Republican Great Depression, the normal number of claims was 275,000. Continued efforts to cut wages by firing workers and replacing them at half pay from the vast pool of the desperate unemployed has pushed the new normal number up. So even as the number climbs, the people seeking unemployment claims, as the new number climbs, we don't know if no jobs are being created or if there are just more low-wage jobs being created. More than half the states had increased claims. The largest increase in initial claims for the week ending September 3 were in Kansas, North Carolina, Washington, New Jersey, and Texas. Wait a minute. Texas has more claims? Where was the job creator? Have you noticed that in one breath, Texas Governor Perry will berate Obama's efforts to create jobs as doomed to failure, since everybody knows the government can't create jobs. But he will, in the next breath, proclaim that Obama has destroyed 2.5 million jobs while in office. While at the same time, he, Perry, and the government of Texas has created 1 million jobs. Irony. Is a country in the Middle East that President Perry will bomb. New foreclosure actions jumped 33% in August, but the number is still lower than the same month last year. This is considered an indication that banks are becoming more aggressive in initiating foreclosures. Again, after the slowdown caused by the flap over the handling of foreclosures in ways best described as criminal. Several more attorneys general have joined New York's attorney general in rejecting a 50-state settlement joined by the Obama administration with the banks over the mortgage scandal, where there isn't supposed to be any prosecution. County court records have shown that the widespread practice of robo-signing goes back to at least 1997 and was not the product of the so-called emergency after the housing bubble burst, as the banks said. Robo-signing is a practice of fabricating documents submitted to the courts that are passed off as original loan agreements and other paperwork required by the court to establish the bank's right to take the money, or to take the property, and to prove the bank took proper steps in dealing with the homeowner. Often it can't be determined who really has the right to foreclose on the property. And this makes any subsequent deed quite possibly invalid. In fact, any house purchased after foreclosure may not have a legitimate title because of the fraudulent actions of banks and their servicing companies. So that bargain you purchased from the bank may really belong to some bank in Shanghai who really holds the note. And it may revert to the homeowner who was defrauded by a subprime lender. This phony paperwork is often exposed only because the signatures don't match. The lack of valid signatures is because they've been signed by minimum wage workers passed off as bank officers and as notaries public who allegedly witnessed the fake signatures and fabricated affidavits. If you or I submitted this sort of fraud to the court, we would be rewarded with long prison terms. But, you know, we aren't rich bankers. We just get to pay for it all. PrairieNumeral2.com. Yeah, I heard that today on the news about bank foreclosures again starting to escalate. Miserable bastards, you know? Just like Prairie 2 pointed out about student loans and mortgages are included. It all starts with the Federal Reserve printing money out of nothing. I mean, there is no, it's a Federal Reserve note. You know what a note is? It's an IOU. It's just a Federal Reserve thingy. You know, I mean, why don't, and you know, it really cracks my ass up. It really drives me crazy. It was when people get busted for counterfeiting. You know, this money's worthless. Which money? The counterfeiting money. Oh, really? What about the other money? Oh, no, that's, what? I said that's, okay, that's what I thought you said. Good Lord. But as Prairie 2 pointed out earlier this evening, the bank, Federal Reserve prints this stuff up and then gives it to the banks at nothing, interest, zero now. The banks then turn around and make loans. They lend this stuff, this paper, to people who are trying just to buy a house. And then when the economy goes belly up, then the banks have the absolute temerity to step up and say, give us our house back, you miserable failure. I wonder how much longer American people are going to put up with this before they change the system one way or another. Your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. One quick email and back to your calls from Mike Trethowen. Now, the reason I give his last name here is he very carefully gave me a pronouncer. I love that. Thanks, Mike. He showed me, broke it into three syllables to show me how to pronounce it. All right. Mike writes, "Hi, Mike. This recession is a corporate-caused recession. It should not fall onto the poor, elderly, and average taxpayer to shoulder the burden of the recovery. I am a supporter of demand-side economics, lowering, not raising, the retirement age, increasing Social Security benefits so people can retire if they want to. We have a woman where I work who is 77 and can't afford to retire. If she could have retired at 60, that is 17 years, some young person out of college could have been working. Great way to lower the unemployment rate, don't you think?" Well, that's one aspect of the social welfare state that I could certainly embrace. Back to your calls. Matt is in Savannah. Hello, Matt.
Hey, Mike, how's it going?
Moving right along. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm actually from Minnesota originally, so I'm liking this 20-degree less weather.
Yeah, why are you there? You go to SCAD?
No, actually, I'm over at Fort Stewart.
Oh, you're in the military.
Roger.
Hinesville. No, yeah. That's Fort Gordon. Where's Fort Stewart? I forget.
No, it's in Hinesville.
Oh, it is Hinesville. Okay. All
yep.
right. Gotcha.
I chose not to live there specifically, but that's where I go work.
It's a terrible little town.
Yeah. There's really not a lot to offer, unfortunately.
Yeah. I spent an awful lot of time in a lot of military towns in Georgia, mostly South Georgia, back in the late 60s, early 70s. And I can bear witness that some of those towns are just, oh, God. I mean, horrible places.
Yeah, it's kind of the running joke around work, that's for sure.
Yeah. But why you really called?
Yeah, actually, I'm part of that 20 to 28-year-old age group that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Me and my girlfriend work probably about 40 hours a week. I work about 50 hours a week. She works night shift. She's a nurse. And I did want to say that I do love her and miss her very much when she's working her night shift.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, I think there's a large theory that goes into why people in my age group think the way that they do. And I think there's a few parts to that. And I think one of the main reasons is their parents have enough wealth where they feel rich, or they definitely don't feel like they're poor, or that, mm-hmm. you know, times are difficult for them.
Right.
We know some people that their parents are actually, you know, doing very well, and our friends kind of think that they're doing as well.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're, you know, in reality, they're probably about where we're at. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're doing fine. I have no complaints at all, but definitely, if we were not making what we're making right now, I could see how people are struggling.
How secure, though, is your and your wife's financial future, do you feel?
Yeah, you know, honestly, Mike, right now, you know, as it stands, I think we're doing okay. But just looking out, you know, looking at the healthcare field, it's pretty clear that as a nurse, you're not, you know, your job is, I wouldn't say expendable, but there's so many people looking for work, even in the medical field, mm-hmm. that drives wages down when you have that many people in the labor pool, and you do not have that union representation that she had in fact from Minnesota, where we're from.
Mm-hmm.
So in that career field, you know, that's one of the things kind of worrying her. And on my side of it, you know, I'm looking at a pay scale that has been steadily rising, you know, for the last 10 years if you're looking back. And I don't think that's a trend that's going to continue.
I may have misunderstood. Are you, do you do contract work for the military, or are you in the military, or is there no connection at all?
No, I'm active.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. So if things keep going the way that they're going, and, you know, we always continue to move up in our prospective fields, then I think, you know, we're going to be okay. But we are still pretty nervous because we don't know what's going to happen.
Do you have children?
We do not. No, nope. We just have two dogs right now.
What about, have you had discussions with your wife about that? And if so,
yeah.
To what degree does money factor into it?
Oh, absolutely. it's kind of funny because when you look around, a lot of people our age are having kids, and I don't think they even think about that. They don't even think about what America could be like in 20 years for their kids.
Right.
Because I know when we graduated, we had a difficult enough time just trying to figure it out for ourselves. So I can't imagine 20 years from now what it's going to look like for our kids.
Now, you said when the two of you graduated, what brought you into the military?
Well, I've actually been in for quite some time. I joined the National Guard to pay for college. And when I went to college, I actually deployed first and came back from Afghanistan, started going to college, and while I was in college, I joined the ROTC program, and I knew that was the more secure route was to just keep doing what I was doing and go active, and, you know, I did like what I was doing, and I knew graduating with a PR degree that it was pretty rough competition out there,
mm-hmm.
So that was kind of my aspect of it. I just stuck with it because I liked it and I was good at it. And my girlfriend, I think she chose nursing halfway through college. I don't think she always wanted to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And she's good at science and biology and just kind of fell into it.
That's what it takes. Well, Matt, thanks a lot. I appreciate your insights here as being somebody in that age group that I happen to mention. And I hope things work out for you and your wife.
Yeah.
Take care, okay?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, sir. Blake is in Fort Worth, Texas, listening on XM. Hi, Blake.
Hey, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Well, I know I have to be quick, but I do want to say I live here in Texas, and not all of us support President Shrub.
Oh, I know.
I know you do, but your listeners too, and Governor Goodhair.
Right.
This is low on the totem pole of your priorities, but I'm a person that's totally blind. I've been blind pretty much all my life, and I've been hearing you talk about the special education cuts and how, and I quote, the angel will save me or protect me or whatever that crap is.
Right.
But had it not been for, you know, special ed, I wouldn't have learned how to read Braille or type on a typewriter, use a white cane. And when I went to college here in the state of Texas, my parents, of course, helped me out, but the state helped me pay for people to...
Blake? Where'd Blake go? Wait a minute. Hold on a second. Blake, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, okay. There you go. I think we accidentally put you on hold. All right. I'll tell you what. We've got to do a break here. Will you hold on?
Oh, yes, sir. I apologize.
No. It was our technical screw-up here. If you'll just hold on.
Yes, sir.
We'll come back after the break and pick up the conversation there if you're going to college. All right? We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Bank system, Mexico, will cut you off if you don't keep your taxes low. But they have no right to wield that sword, cause they take their orders from the chairman of the board. IMF, WTO, I hear these words just every place I go. Who are these people? Who elected them? I replace them with some of my friends. And you, I'm listening.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. We're talking with Blake in Fort Worth, Texas. Okay. You've been blind most of your life. You went to school with, did you say with student loans or with scholarships or?
Well, the state of Texas helped me pay for readers to read textbooks to me and special equipment, like talking computers back then to help me, get out of school. And I hear about all these cuts and it kind of scares me. And, you know, I want to thank you for being a champion of people with disabilities, because I would have known about the cuts, especially had you not mentioned them. And I also want to say, I went online and bought your True Sticker coffee mug. Even though I don't know what it looks like, I still figure it's pretty cool.
Well, thank you.
But it just amazes me that they talk about how, you know, we can cut all this funding, and yet, you know, a lot of people can't afford the special equipment or a reader to help us out, you know, and as people a sign language interpreter or whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. It's just sad. So I want to thank you for bringing that to our attention and, like I say, being a supporter of.
I guess the first people that will be affected or would be affected, have been affected, with budget cuts are the ones that, in fact, whether we like it or not, or whether you like it or not, in fact, have the least powerful voice in politics. And that's usually young people. Real young people, you know, kids, right. You know, children, people with disabilities, people who are not organized into any kind of a pressure group. And that, you know, that is absolute hell, because, and I'm not speaking from my own personal experience, but I'm speaking from experience of people I know who have shared with me pretty much what you're talking about, Blake, that some of the first people to feel the bite when it comes are people who are, if not politically powerless, have a lot less power than normally abled folks who can organize and spend a lot of money and hire lobbyists and so on and so forth. So what do you tell people who might also be blind or have a situation where they need special help in getting an education? What do you tell people who ask you, Blake, what am I going to do?
I always tell them to do some research with the agencies that help people with disability or blind people, like the American Council of the Blind, mm-hmm. National Federation for the Blind. You know, check those agencies, check their state rehab agencies. You know, do those kind of things, you know, first, because a lot of times we don't know what's out there. I didn't know what was out there until I started doing research. My family did research. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of have to be your own, unfortunately, have to be your own advocate. You know, I have a job now, but I wouldn't have a job if someone didn't help me get there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always tell people to do those kind of things.
Well, you know, that's true if a person's blind or sighted, you know. What I hear the other day, or maybe it was today, that people looking for jobs in the majority of instances, if they do get a job in this Republican depression that we're dealing with, it usually comes as a result of somebody, you know, helping them out, making a contact, making a phone call, so on and so forth. I guess you really do have to network. You got to do those things. Like you said, you have to become your own advocate. If you don't, because nobody's going to advocate for you, not anymore. I mean,
no,
they really
don't. Especially the person with disability, you really have to be your...
Are you generally optimistic, Blake, or are you pessimistic about the way things are going in this country?
Well, I'd love to tell you I'm optimistic, but I can't.
Yeah.
I feel like we're sliding backwards, and if people who are, if you will, quote, able-bodied or having trouble finding a job, and it's
right.
10 times worse, you know, for people with any kind of disability.
Sure.
To find work. And so, you know, I'm always looking for something to better myself, even though I'm working, and that's very difficult. So if it's difficult for me, I can only imagine what it's like for other folks with disabilities. It's just kind of, I don't feel like we really have someone that champions that we're not looking for, a hand out, we're looking for a hand up.
I hear
trite
you.
As that sounds.
No, I don't think it sounds trite. And I appreciate what you had to say. Blake, take care. Call us again, all right?
Thank you, Mike. Take care, buddy.
All right, man. We'll be back. We have a break here? I think we do. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. If you're on hold, we're going to get your call. We have an open line here. The number is 877-996-2556.
Radio right, from the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Remember this song?
41 shots. 41 shots. 41 shots. 41 shots.
We need some quiet.
Before the hour, was that was about the murder of Amadou Diallo, I believe, right? 41 shots. What's that, American Skin? Is that the name of it? The Boss. Michael in Roswell writes, the saddest little interest trick today that the Fed is doing is the ongoing practice of allowing some of the investment banks to obtain commercial bank status, so they can gain access to the Fed's so-called discount window, which allows them to borrow money at 0 or 0.25% interest. And then the Fed has encouraged the banks to buy federal debt with the money with a guaranteed return of 3%. Oh, God. How come we can't do that, Kathy? I mean, we could buy $100 worth. The government has worked hard in the last 30 years, Michael writes, to subsidize the profits of private international corporations. But that one takes the cake. It really does. Old Karl Marx is probably stroking his beard and saying, didn't I say capitalism would eat itself? Didn't I? Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. Where are we? We have an open line, 877-996-2556, if you'd like to call in. Mark is in San Francisco, listening on Green 960. Hello, Mark.
Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, thank you. I wanted to elaborate on something you brought up about the age group of 21 to 28.
Yeah.
And, you know, how they would be impacted if they voted Republican, or if they, you know, Republicans got in again.
Right.
It would definitely decimate that age group. There's no doubt about it. And, you know, what's important to note, Mike, is the young people came out for Barack Obama, but they didn't come out in the midterms, and the teabaggers got in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're paying the price for that. And so, really, that group has to come back out and really understand what's at stake here for them. You know, they've got a lot to lose. This Republican Party is going to make them wage slaves if they have their way.
Mm.
It's really an important election for the young Americans. We'll all suffer if the Republicans get in, but especially the younger ones. They're going to be the, you know, basically the ones that are going to be sacrificed for the corporate welfare that's going on in this country.
Well, let me ask you something, and this is not a challenge. It's a real question. Could you or me, but it's your idea here, your thought that you're bringing to the program. Can you really advocate young people to vote Democratic, knowing, and I'm sure you do, that the Democratic Party. I don't mean the Democratic Party as it appears on paper, or the Democratic Party that was in existence when I used to vote Democrat without even thinking about it. But I'm talking about the new Democratic Party, and especially the policies of Barack Obama are not advantageous to young people either. So, you know, Obama, whose interest seems to lie with the wealthy. With the investment banking people, the financial services people, how do you or I honestly tell young people to do it again, to vote for Barack Obama, knowing that Barack Obama has not delivered? Now, I understand that he has had this horrible, monstrous Republican Party that has determined he's going to be a one-term president, but he hasn't shown the kind of leadership, I don't think, that is so necessary. He hasn't said to the Democratic Party to, F off and started making decisions that tilt towards, and we need it at this time, a democratic socialism or social democracy, whatever you want to call it. How do you advise young people to vote for him again?
It's really hard, Mike. I have a lot of problems with this president. Probably for the exact same reasons you do. But I cannot let a Republican Party, as it is right now, get into office. I just can't allow it. I mean, I guess it's a pre-vet defense type of mentality, but they've beaten this country down so hard so long,
mm-hmm.
I just don't have it in me to allow them in. Now, I know the Democratic Party needs to be changed, and there needs to be more progressive leadership. But for now, I just can't let these rats in office anymore.
You can't do it. You can make the argument that what's the reality? The legislative and executive branch of government are supposed to be by design in conflict, and then the Supreme Court has to step in and make decisions. But the legislative branch right now, the Senate, is still controlled by Democrats, and yet they seem to be immobilized. The House, obviously, is controlled by Republicans, and the executive branch is controlled by Democrats. So, I mean, if you want to use a very elementary way of looking at it, the Democrats are in control right now, 2-1 over the Republicans, and yet nothing is happening. Nothing. So how worse could it be if the situation were reversed? Now, hear me out. If all of a sudden the Republicans were in control of the presidency and the House, and the Democrats retained control of the Senate, we would continue where nothing would get done unless the Democrats would just fold. Isn't one way out of this is to start thinking seriously in terms of a different paradigm in this country, whether it's a third party or challenging head on the established political system with the idea of replacing it with something else. And I'm not talking about replacing it with anything sinister. I'm talking about maybe replacing it with a parliamentary system, with a multi-party system, because we can't keep going like this. And I hear what you're saying about young people. If the Republicans, I'll certainly concede that point, and it's a good one. If the Republicans do get in, the bloodletting is going to be an artery cut instead of a vein. So I don't know. If somebody 22 years old asks me how to vote right now, I don't know. I don't know how I'd answer him.
I know it's a tough time, Mike. I totally agree with you. But I just, like I said, what this Republican Party has done, especially with the Tea Party and what Bush did and this, what this party's done to this country, you know, I, only thing that I see is that I want to do everything I can to push back against it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other options you brought up, they're options that need to be really, you know, examined and looked at. Whether or not we could do it now, it might be, you know, we might have to bite the bullet on this election. But I darn well am not going to let the Republican Party, I'm not going to vote for them, and I'm not going to let them destroy the country if I can help it. Because the outcome will be, if these people weasel their way in, I guarantee it, Mike, there's no doubt about it, there'll be blood in the streets.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all. Mark, thanks. I appreciate your comments, all right?
Okay, brother.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for checking in. Yeah, I have, well, I guess I don't have any kids right now in that age group. I did, but mine are beyond that, or they're Molly's age, that 21 to 28 group. And of course, I don't have to worry about my kids or the kids who have married my children voting Republican ever. It's just, and it's not because I've brainwashed them. I don't think I ever sat my three oldest down and said, all right, let me explain to you the difference between Republican and Democrat, the difference between fascism and social democracy. I never did that. But I guess they just picked up from me what was going on and made their own decisions. The only thing I consciously did with my kids when they were younger is steer them completely away from the madness of religion. I just didn't want them to have their brains so corrupted by that kind of poison. But as far as politics, I think my three adult children have come to their political points of view on their own. Just from living in the world, from going through school, from struggling with jobs, from getting married, getting divorced, having children, coming to terms with political reality. I think they figured out that the Republicans will cut your throat and laugh while you bleed, and the Democrats will just occasionally cut your throat. We'll be right back.
From the moment you wake and leave the house in the morning, the terrorists or Democrats strike without warning. So till your backseat in bed, wear a bucket on your head. That's what I said. And to show your support for right-wing ideology, the raids on Iraq and the rape of the ecology, while the treasury's being bled.
10 before the hour.
Keep a bucket on your head.
John is in Lexington, Kentucky, listening on XM. Hello, John.
Hey, Mike. Long time no talk.
Yeah, welcome back.
I was telling Kathy when she's taking the call, you know, I want to apologize for McConnell again and the turtle that he is and the fact that he refuses to, you know, spend a red dime on the two bridges. I know you've heard about the one Sherman Minton Bridge, which connects Louisville with Indiana.
Right.
And then the bridge, you know, between Cincinnati and northern Kentucky. And this I-75 bridge has actually fallen off and hit my tractor trailer twice, chunks of it.
You're kidding.
I'm serious with a heart attack, and the company I work for has actually charged this to the Ohio Department of Transportation because they're responsible for the lower deck, and the Kentucky Transportation Committee is responsible for the upper deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually called Governor Mitch Daniels' office in Indianapolis, and they've refused to speak to me about the Sherman Minton Bridge. Because that's NDOT's responsibility.
Isn't this madness? Isn't this just total madness?
It's stupidity.
But isn't it beyond that? I mean, why would governors of states or senators or I don't care who they are, with bridges of all things, bridges falling down, and these unconscionable bastards make a decision that they are going to what do they want, John? Do they want a bridge to collapse and 35 or 40 people die? What the hell do they want?
I mean, that's what I was asking the calls off today, and I was hung up on. And I asked the secretary, I said, you all want another Minneapolis? Is that what you're going for?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, for the record, I despise conservatives. Outright despise them.
Yeah, I hear you.
Thanks for taking my call, Mike. I really like your show.
All right, John. I appreciate you checking in. Take care. I've said this before, and I think you know this, gentle listener. It's one thing to be in opposition in politics and, you know, for people of various political points of view to put up their best argument and occasionally get nasty about it. But when people's lives are at stake, and I'm not just talking about collapsing bridges or huge repositories scattered around of nuclear waste or schools ready to collapse or the roofs on schools or dams that are in dangerous condition or holding ponds that are holding horrific, enormous amounts of horrific toxic sludge from mining operation, you know, all this stuff that's going on. It's one thing to have a differing political point of view, but is it not madness to say that my political point of view is so important to me that I will put people's lives at risk? I'm not talking about an invasion or occupation of another country. I'm talking about domestically. I will put my fellow Americans' lives at risk in this case in order to defeat this president because I don't like him. I don't like him on a couple of reasons, not the least of which he's a Democrat, but he's also an African-American, and he's not supposed to be the leader of this country. So I'm, you know, it's exactly what Mitch McConnell said, that the primary objective was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. What kind of sickness is that? I mean, even if you, you know, live in Kentucky and you're a hardcore Republican, is it worth the lives of people just for this half-wit Mitch McConnell to make that particular statement? Do you really, you conservative Republican white people that live in Kentucky, is it that important to you? Is it really? And if it is, God damn you. Right straight into your personal hell. You know, I mean, really. How disgusting of you. And not just Kentucky. I'm not picking on Kentucky. Hell, we have it here in Georgia. They have it in Pennsylvania. They have it in Wisconsin. How can you right-wingers, you Republicans, you baggers, whatever the hell you are, how can you do this? Shame on you. You're just disgusting. You really are. You're anti-American. You've taken your Christian religion and turned it into some hateful, degenerate, sick vehicle to just batter people with. Just damn all of you. I never thought, and this is becoming a cliche. So many people are saying this now. I never thought I would live to see the time when the political system in this country was murdering this country. Now, that's because a lot of people were not very aware of what the political system was. And I'll put myself in that category at one time. I honestly believe that both parties had the best interests of the United States at heart. Of course, in order to believe that, you have to overlook an awful lot of war and madness and international murder and mayhem. And I mean, you can only go back so far. before you find, you can go back a long way, and you'll find American involvement in all sorts of atrocities, starting with the Spanish-American War. But I never thought that, and this is ignorance, I never thought that our political system would degenerate into this. Of course it would. But it was ignorance, and I am not that ignorant any longer, and I just wonder why anybody else is. I guess that's my point. Hey, where's Kevin? that's not tonight's music. We need Friday night music. Where is Kevin Kinney? Kevin! I'm going straight to hell. Well, if we're not going to play it, that's all right. But then people think, well, hey, they're not live tonight. Yes, we are. I mean, come on, damn it. This is Friday the 16th. All right, listen, never mind, Kathy. That's right. Have a great weekend, y'all. I'll see you Monday, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. And have a great weekend wherever you are, Kevin Kinney.